I'm not denying power of the Planeswalker, but man, when you see, you know, the board states as they are, and then even somebody like return, you know, flips a thing in ice, it's kind of ridiculous.
I think people are kind of getting, I don't know if it's because the Pro Tours this weekend and nobody wanted to reveal tech, but I think people are forgetting what cards we have in standard right now.
Thing in the ice. I think its greatest impact is going to be in modern, because you can put it in the same deck with Ashiok and play it from a control format, whether that's Grixis, whether it's Esper, whether it's just blue-black.
Here's the issue. It's a timing issue, right? It's whether or not you're looking at these as value for the long term. But if I really want to play a standard deck that needs four Js and I only have two, which is the case right now, is it in my best interest to go throw down $180 of cold, hard, green cash on two Js, or to use my collection as a resource?
Olivia, I would say, has the potential to go up Mobilize for War.
Well, that's because people found out my tech about Legacy Pickfight junk. Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to Tryhards. We're going to get to know each other over this next run and see what it's like when the magical shoe is on the other foot. We'll get to exactly what that means in just a moment. The Tryhards are TRI. That means there is three of us: Sean Seacrease, Matt Hurley, and Brian Tibbetts. Guys, introduce yourselves. This is episode one of Tryhards. Brian, we'll start with you.
My name is Brian Tibbetts. I am currently residing in Galesburg, Illinois, west central part of the state. 42, been playing Magic since about 94 or so. That Sean basically taught me how to do. We've been playing together. Married, father of two beautiful daughters, and love being here.
Matt Hurley, I live in western Illinois with right close to where Sean lives, actually. Love Legacy, love EDH, love odd formats, and I like janky-ass decks.
And I'm Sean Seacrease. We are the Tryhards. I love Super Friend strategies, drawing cards, and Legacy, and trying to brew a little bit in Legacy as well, usually with the aforementioned Super Friend strategies, which sometimes gets some crazy raised eyebrow looks when you take it to the tournament table, especially after you win a couple of rounds. It always ends up interesting. We're going to get to know each other as we've launched Tryhards for really a reason, guys. We didn't get together just to talk about Magic news of the day or be another show that talks about tournament results. Yeah, we'll do some of that, but we're also going to talk about finance. We're going to talk about what it's like to be a full-time adult and a part-time Magic player. When you listen to the show, listen to it with that in mind, because that's where we're all at in the game right now. We've been playing for quite some time. We all mentioned we love Legacy, and we're fortunate enough to be in a position that really between the three of us, we don't have a Mr. Suitcase, so to speak. Matt's probably the closest, but we can get our hands on anything that we want to play in our playgroup. So we're really lucky in that format of it. But guys, what does it mean to you? Full-time adult, part-time Magic player. For me, it means the exact opposite of what it was like kind of 20 years ago. And you hear Magic players say all the time, man, money's kind of a little bit tough to come by right now, but I've got all this time to play the game. You know, if we can hit the road and go somewhere cheap and, you know, put six Magic players in a hotel room and each pay $18.50, then, you know, we can afford to go there for the weekend if we eat at McDonald's on the dollar menu. And we're kind of on the other end of that. We might not finish great in tournaments. None of us are certainly angling to make the Pro Tour. But making it that kind of once, or hopefully, if we're lucky, two or three times a year outing to where you go and you can really enjoy yourself. We were all last together in Indianapolis for the Star Cities that was there, not recently for the Invitational, but the prior visit to Indy earlier this spring. And yes, Magic's important to us, but it's having the experience that you get to have when you travel with your friends who also play Magic. And that's the way I think we're all kind of putting time into the game now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It's to me, playing Magic is something I love to do. Carving out the time is the hardest thing I can do. And it's funny, every time I read articles about, you know, the pros, especially when they're gearing up for a Pro Tour or, you know, testing or brewing after a new set comes out, and they're, you know, saying about, you know, well, I've been testing for the last 4 days and we've put five or six decks together and things like that. And I just kind of have to shake my head and thinking of, let's see, I've got all these papers to grade because I teach high school. I got to put the girls down. Let's see, there's some dirty dishes in the kitchen that got to get going. Oh, yeah, there's probably some laundry that needs to be folded. And then part of me is like, yeah, where does Magic fit into that? When I do get to play, however, I cherish every single moment of it. And so in that context, it's not about how I finish. It's about having fun. And so as an older and wiser gentleman, that's basically what I like to do.
Brian's other contribution to the game, especially in his crew in Galesburg, he is great about it. He will loan out any card, any deck to almost anyone. And Brian, I think you actually have a tote board in the portion of your basement where you work that tallies how well your decks did in other people's hands, right?
Yes, I do. And it's actually funny. I just got I got a Facebook message from a guy today that said, hey, I left the cards on your bench, which is code for I have this like little breezeway right off my front porch. And there's a little like bench in there, you know, for people to sit on or whatever. So I came home today to like 37 Magic cards just sitting there that he had collected from a bunch of other guys. So, yeah, it was pretty funny. Come home, it's like, hey, the mailman came. So. But no, the tote board's actually doing pretty well right now because a lot of the guys around here are pretty good. But it's in all kinds of different decks. Somebody's playing tokens. They need to borrow some token stuff. Somebody else is playing the ramp. They borrowed, you know, the ramp and Eldrazi stuff. Somebody else is playing kind of what I like to play right now, the blue-red stuff in Standard. So they borrowed what I had. And then other people are just frustrated, like, what do you mean you don't have that? And I said, well, it's gotten loaned out. Somebody else is using it. He's like, oh, that sucks. So it's kind of funny when I can't fulfill all of my loaning duties, you know, as people want.
I'm kind of in the same boat as you guys. Before I started I was a late bloomer and took me a while to graduate college due to Army requirements. And I actually was kind of a binder grinder for a couple years before I started my career.
Ooh.
About 5 years ago.
Dirty
I know.
Shark at the table taking Ooh, advantage of people.
I've always got a more of a finance mind than most of the other guys, but I just don't have the time to play as much. I rarely can even make the FNM just because don't get to see my girlfriend a lot during the weekend. I mean, she lives with – or during the week, but she lives with me. But, you know, she gets home three days a week about 9 o'clock at night. So I like having that Friday night when even if she gets home a little late to spend time with her. I like spending time with her on Saturday and we can get stuff around the house done. And – whenever I can carve out a weekend, maybe a three-day weekend, go somewhere with these idiots, I usually try to.
Another part of the tryhards that you'll get to know, the three of us have a great love of, well, all things adult beverage. And what are you drinking? He is going to set the stage as part of the opening of the show each week. Guys, I'll start with you, Matt. What are you drinking tonight?
Goose Island IPA. And I'll tell you what, it was the six-pack, the final one out of the six-pack I took out to play disc golf. I think it might have went a little skunky because it's not so hot tonight.
So, That's just too bad.
It's about as hot as your drive on the disc golf course. All three of us really enjoy our disc golf as well.
This week I have cracked open one of my four from Pipeworks Brewing Company up in Chicago. This is the Lizard King IPA. Pours real clear, real smooth. It's got that kind of citrusy citrusy hop notes, and yeah, it's very delicious.
Oh, I'm just apparently slumming it. I'm just having gin and tonic. I've just got the Beefeater going with the tonic water here in the office as we record.
Hey, it's the season for it. There's no shame in this.
It is. I was out on the disc golf course earlier tonight before we did this show. It was a beautiful night, so I thought, you know what, I'm gonna put together gin and tonic, head up to the office, and we're gonna do episode one of Tryhards here tonight. So now that we've established that we don't have very much time to play Magic, did anybody actually play any Magic this past week? I know I was able to get up to FNM, which I thought was going to be Modern because of the Modern weekend that's coming up, and we'll get to more of that in a moment. And I think our LGS is doing Modern this Friday night, but this past week we played Standard. That was right.
It was Standard.
I got to roll out my new Mardu Walker deck that I've been putting quite a bit of time into lately, and it's actually gotten to the point where I'm liking it a lot. I've been making a big push toward getting more involved and better at limited formats. Whenever I say limited, you can pretty well just understand that means draft, because sealed, it just always seems to elude me. unless I have one of the big pools that I opened up when Matt and I hit the road for Shadows Over Innistrad in Springfield, Illinois, which is about a 90-minute drive away from us. If you give me an Avacyn and some other things in my packs, I'm still able to kind of leverage that.
Don't worry, you can still find a way to lose. I saw that myself.
I can usually make that work out. But no, I mean, I've just been trying to get better at draft. There's another one coming up on Saturday here. So if I only have one chance to play this weekend, I think in a big change for me that I'm going to actually try to make sure I make that draft, because it's something I've been trying to get quite a bit better at. And ever since I've started to pay attention more, do more reading to find out what the archetypes are, pay attention to those things, I've noticed my results really kind of following suit. So it's fun on that real ramp up to see that success come like right away.
I'm with you on that. I'd love to get better at limited formats, and I do like sealed, as you know. I'm terrible at draft. I'm just terrible at reading. Like the guys around me, I'm like, why am I getting all these crappy cards? It's like, because I'm not drafting what I'm supposed to be drafting. So that's something I definitely need to work on. But sealed, it seems like I can take the stuff and turn it into something. It hasn't been that way the last couple sealeds that I've gone to, but I've still had a lot of fun and things. But yeah, I didn't play any Magic this past week. I was going to hook up with some guy and just do some trading and maybe some playtesting, but that fell through for, you know, various reasons and whatnot. And I was hoping to get away this Saturday. There's a couple tournaments going on. There's a big Modern Super Invitational up in Trademart in the Quad Cities that a lot of guys are going up to, but I just don't think it's going to happen for me.
I haven't played much Modern. I'm not a huge fan of the format, but we'll get into this later. But there's actually one big reason I do kind of want to go make F&M this week. I didn't get to play much of any this week. I did do a quick draft, Shadows draft online. Got second in an 8-4, so I did okay. It was 2 hours of my life I'll probably never get back. But
wait, did you just tell us you got second in a 2-man?
No, in an 8-4, oh, which is okay. An 8-man.
Oh, yeah. I kind of heard the same thing. I was like, what?
Like, wait a minute.
No, it's...
That just makes you the loser.
That's just a very polite way of saying I lost.
Yes, I lost. No, the set is actually a ton of fun to draft. I just wish I could do more. I feel like these sets are going to start to get flooded with product towards the end of this year, and I'm not super happy about it.
There were some big announcements made by Wizards this week, and in fact, they just kind of grouped it all together, kind of like a cluster bomb, and dropped everything on us through the end of the year. And that's something that really has seemed to have almost hijacked the week this week. We've been talking less about actually playing Magic and more about what's coming up. I don't play as much casual Magic as I used to. We used to have a pretty good group that got together for Commander and Plane Chase and did all these things. And for various reasons, that group hasn't disbanded, but we hardly ever get together anymore to do that. And that was my only real casual outlet. So, you know, the Plane Chase anthology that's coming out, the new Commander decks, unless there's something that's printed that's going to be legacy relevant, like a True Name Nemesis, those really aren't even on my radar. So really, I'm just looking forward to the next issued set and where we're going to be going as we wrap up Innistrad block and then move on to Kaladesh, which to me was the big announcement this week.
I think that's a huge announcement. It's a fresh, it's kind of a fresh slate for Wizards, so they can kind of do whatever they want. Now, some drunk idiots bought out Steamflogger Boss because I don't know why. You're beyond me. They people are just way out there when it comes to what they're guessing is going to be in these sets. The actual next big set, though, is not that. It's both Conspiracy and Eternal Masters that's coming up. I mean, we have Eternal Masters, Conspiracy, Kaladesh, the follow-up to Kaladesh, Commander sets, the Plane Chase anthologies, Dual Decks coming out. And then I know I'm missing one or two sets in there, too. I just named off 7 different sets, and we have 6 months left.
You said Conspiracy, and I started baby necking it and almost falling asleep. But Legacy Masters, I'm quite a bit upset that they didn't do a Grand Prix around it the way they do with Modern Masters. I thought that really slighted the set, but I'm excited to play it nonetheless.
You know, the thing that has me more upset than even the Grand Prix is it doesn't seem like they've given the stores any guidance on how to present this to players. They just... They expect it. It's a missed opportunity because they expect to just put it on the shelf and it's going to sell, which I agree it is. But drum up some excitement. What if that casual player who says, oh my gosh, I've really wanted to get into Legacy, or I want to get some of those expensive cards. He's going to go out and just buy packs. That's not – they need to do something, you know, have a guideline to say, hey, here's a good guideline if you want to sell this much product. Here's some of your price guidelines, et cetera, et cetera.
Right now, I'm a bit ambivalent about Eternal Masters, to be honest with you. I'm excited about getting down and drafting some, especially with some guys who've never played with these kind of cards before. Sean, Hurley, you and we all know, I mean, any card that is opened in here, we're going to be like, oh, cool. New artwork on, you know, Force of Will, Wasteland. Those are the two that we know of right now. And whatever else they decide to put in here. But it's not going to be like you have to look at the card and figure out what it does. I think we're all pretty versed in the cards that are going to come out of this. But right now, I'm just wondering, like Hurley said, where does this fit? You know, is this designed to be the entry into some of the, Eternal formats for those players who don't have it? Or are they going to use this for value to trade up and get those modern and, not just the modern staples, but some of the standard staples that are starting to skyrocket a little bit? So, yeah, it's interesting. I'm a little wary about buying a lot of product myself on this, even as an investment. But I'm excited nonetheless just to see what kind of cards come out of it.
The thing that kills me for is this is going to be a set that we're going to be able to get one, maybe two drafts. Because even if we got all of us together here in Quincy that could afford to do this multiple times, that's really, really difficult. And we're still only going to have six people. Other people are going to say, I'm not paying $40 to draft this set.
Wait a minute, Matt. You're the one who's trying to sell everybody at our LGS on box sealed.
You're right. I am.
Because you're a baller and you can do stuff like that.
You're right. I am. But let's look at this realistically. How many times did you draft Modern Masters?
This last time around, I think two. But I was extremely busy that summer. I had other things going on in life, the projects I was working on. This summer, while I'm going to be busy, maybe it's just because Legacy Masters, or Eternal Masters. We all think of it in terms of Legacy, but Eternal Masters, maybe it's just because it has that fire going that I'm really looking forward to this, and I want to be in a situation where I draft this half a dozen, eight times.
I agree. I want to as well. I just locally here, I'm not sure it's going to be able to happen. I mean, we're going to have to. It's going to have to be a go to a Taylorville, you know, and go to out of the city and go to a big event that they're having.
Yeah, that may be true. It's interesting that, you know, this is the way in for some of the players. Like, I do believe that's what Wizards is going for. But at, you know, $240 a box for 24 packs, and MSRP is what, $10.99 on a pack? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty steep when somebody's looking and saying, okay, I could continue to play standard FNM, you know, $350, you know, get three packs for what I'm going to pay for one pack of this. And what am I going to do with these cards? I don't know if I can trade them away if I'm not going to use them. It's got to find its legs, I think. And so is it going to be the case where old guys like us who have the cash, as Sean was alluding to earlier, and rarely the time, are going to throw down just to, you know, get some of this stuff to draft either amongst friends or in kind of a setting down at the LGS? Or is it going to be more like people are really going to bite into this and really try to, yes, I'm going to learn a new format and try to get into the new format because there's going to be enough product opened. I don't see enough product being opened on this. I see a Modern Masters. Those have been successful, but I just don't see that happening with the Eternal Masters. And in a lot of ways, I hope I'm wrong.
I agree with you that it's not going to be opened to the amount that, you know, maybe the Modern Masters was, but I really think that they should have given some guidance. They should have made it like have a Eternal Masters weekend, have a game day. You know, maybe they're not having GPs, but have a Eternal Masters day and give out some really cool foils. You know, it's obviously you're not going to give out Force of Will foils, but let's say what about Foil Brainstorm for top eight? Something like that, and then that really gets the players worked up.
Well, I think there's plenty of marketing opportunities for it there, but what does this set appeal to for a new player, because Mark Rosewater just came out, it was earlier this week, and did a whole thing on the mothership where he was talking about the steps as they see it for new players and the entry in. And it starts with the sort of dual decks that are made to play against each other. And then Wizards couldn't internally define what step two was. Step three, they said, was the like fat pack deck builder's toolkit sort of thing. And then step four was just, now you're buying booster packs and playing down at your LGS. And they had to come up with that second step. And you can read all, if you haven't, about what they decided to do. And it was tailor-made Planeswalker decks to kind of give you that experience. They're still going to play very much like introductory decks, but it sort of gives you that next level experience. Where does a set like Eternal Masters fit in there? Because the complexity and the breadth and depth of the mechanics that will be present in the set are going to blow a new player away. So I have to think that it's for either people who are in our position, who have been playing and have Legacy Collections and just want to play essentially Cube Light. I work from home in the afternoon, and when I took a break today from what I was doing, I thought, you know what? I'm gonna kind of shift gears in Legacy, and I took apart the deck that I had been playing, which was sort of blue-red Young Pyromancer Delver. I thought, you know what? I enjoy drawing all the cards and cheating huge fatties into play, so I just whipped up Reanimator. I mean, that's kind of the situation that we're in. Like, we don't need to chase these cards. But where does a new player break in? Because as I'm putting Reanimator together, I'm looking at these cards going, how does a new player even start to not comprehend, but get their hands on these sorts of things that you need for this? And not everything is outrageously expensive. You know, careful study, things like that. They've been out of print so long.
That would have been an Eternal Masters day. And this is the last I'll say of this, because we're beating a dead horse here. An Eternal Masters game day or an Eternal Masters weekend, whatever you want to call it, would have been the perfect marketing technique to explain to players what this set means. You know, they could have said, want to experience a Legacy style or Eternal style formats, come to this weekend. Want to expand out your Eternal card collection, come to this weekend. There's a multitude of opportunities they had here.
It's very interesting about that. I think you've hit it right on the head for that. I'm very curious just to see what this is going to do to card prices. You know, if enough product is opened, is it really going to depress some of those Legacy staples that aren't on the, you know, reserved list and things like that? So that's kind of a minor concern of mine, but it still is a somewhat concern. Or is this just going to do kind of what Modern did, and it's just going to start taking off and card prices are just going to keep getting jacked up?
Sean, you hit on something that I really, really wanted to touch on. It's a great thing, but I'm really worried. It has me really, really worried. And that's the Planeswalker decks. Now, in case you didn't read, the Planeswalker deck is basically a custom-tailored deck that has a unique Planeswalker in it that's not in the set, but it will be standard legal. And these are supposed to replace the Clash Packs, if you will. And then it's going to have some custom-tailored cards in it, a couple rares. I think it said it'll have 5 total cards that are not available in the set, but they're going to power down them. So they're going to increase the cost, and they're going to power them down so that they're not going to have an effect on Standard. This is meant so for $15 you can go buy that. You can have a good start on Standard, and they're supposed to be splashy, and they're supposed to show off the different mechanics that are in the sets. Now, this is part of this ramping up that Mark Rosewater talked about, where you start off with the sample decks or Magic Duels, then you go into the deck or the second product, which is where they really needed to fill it in. Then the third product was Deck Builder's Toolkit, and then you go to expansion boosters, etc. The one they're filling it in with is these Planeswalker decks. So my concern here is at $15, you're getting a Planeswalker deck and then 59 other cards. And 2 booster packs. It's a pretty good deal. It's a great way to pull in, especially with this flashy Planeswalker. It's a great way to pull in new players. I'm concerned Wizards has a bad habit of screwing up. What happens when they print a Planeswalker that's good? Or maybe these aren't selling that well. Maybe they're like the intro decks, which they are getting rid of. maybe they're like the intro decks where they say, you know what, they're not selling that well. So instead of making this J7 drop, we'll make him 5 drop. And all of a sudden, you made him a standard all-star. But these cards aren't available in normal packs. What's going to happen to those prices? This is going to be just like Mind Seize with True Name Nemesis. And they're going to have to do a lot of, I guess, pedaling backwards to try and figure out what to do. And you know invariably that's going to happen. It might not happen this year or next year, but it will happen eventually.
Well, Rosewater acknowledged that. And I think when he said, we're going to make these Planeswalkers interesting in the packs, and yes, they'll be standard legal, but they're not going to be pushed to make a splash on the tournament scene. Yes, it only takes one unanticipated sort of line of type on an ability that interacts with something else, and now you've got an all-star. I mean, look at what we're seeing with Nahiri in Modern because of her ultimate, which is so quick to get to, and you can go now put Spaghetti Monster in play for a turn and get a free Annihilator 6, 15 out of it. So her price is almost entirely based on that potential in Modern, and she's not really doing a whole lot in Standard outside of my deck, of course. But you're right. I mean, it's what happens when they print something unintended on one of these Planeswalkers that suddenly has that interaction. So we'll see where it goes. I tend to think of this, it's like the expanded roster of the Avengers. You know, not every Avenger is Captain America or Iron Man. Some of them really aren't that powerful and aren't that great. So you're going to have these other Planeswalkers. They're sort of the minor background characters in, you know, a large ensemble cast like Avengers.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I love the idea of it. Don't get me wrong. I love the flavor of it. Nothing puts, if you're playing against, like, you know, a 12-year-old, 10-year-old, whatever, nothing makes him more excited or her than casting a Planeswalker. It could be a 12-drop Planeswalker that he has all minuses on and it's the worst plane. It could be Tibalt 2.0. But nothing makes him more excited than casting that. So I think what they're doing here is fantastic as far as trying to line out, hey, here's how you go into it. They just need to explain that, because not most people who are these are targeted towards are not going to dailymtg.com to read about this. So what about on the sample decks? You know, they put stage one like they did in the old days. You know, they had the advanced, the beginner. Put like stage one on the sample decks, and then on the Planeswalker put stage two, and then, you know, deck builder's toolkit put stage three, you know, et cetera. It's just so to give the player who's buying them from Walmart an idea of like where am I supposed to buy, how do I get started.
Wizards is just kind of flooding the market with so many different avenues into the game, whether it be something like Eternal Masters, whether it be something like the Planeswalkers deck, which I actually think is a really, really good idea. Like you said, Planeswalkers are the sexy poster children for the game. I am curious to see how it all falls out. And as an old man who can't keep up on everything going on in the game that I love, it's really kind of makes your head spin sometimes. You're like, oh, wait, what should I be focusing on now? Eternal Masters? Kaladesh? I have no idea.
Well, and you have to think too, you know, it, say you're, I don't know, your cousin, what a relative or whatever, is like, oh, I know Brian likes to play Magic. I'll run to Walmart and pick up some Magic for his birthday or Christmas or whatever. Are they going to know what to buy you? No. And I think they get away from this idea of putting beginner on stuff because – or starter, because I think it implies simplification, but I think that's a bad move. So maybe on the deck builder's toolkit, you know, put beginner or something like that. And so – the layperson could look at it and say, I have no idea what to buy him. Okay, or I just want to get into this game. Oh, that's for beginners. Well, I know he plays, so that's not what he wants. Maybe we need to go to this product over here.
I just actually found an end around for that. My girlfriend just emails Brian whenever she's going to get me something, and then he tells her what it is that I need or that I want. And it's actually worked out pretty well.
It's pretty good going shopping with other people's money, especially for Magic cards.
I'd like to touch on the Commander decks. I love Commander when I'm playing with my friends. When I'm playing with random casuals at the store, I want to punch them all in the face. But this is coming from the guy who plays Kozilek, you know, or who played Kozilek, you know, casts a turn three Kozilek almost every time. So I guess I can't say much. But The Commander 2016, I think that looks pretty cool. Four color commanders. I think you have a lot of design space there. And a lot of people are thinking, well, how do I balance the four color commanders? I think what you're missing is with the commander identity rule that if they have an activated ability, you can have two color commanders and then have two activated abilities in their text box. And there you go. You got four color commander. I also think they're going to it'll be cool because they'll have some four color kind of like legendary you know, like enchantments or legendary lands or, you know, something that's going to be unique for that four color style that and that it's going to give them some good design space too to reprint some products.
As always, I'll be looking at it to see what potential impact anything will have in Legacy. So
that's yeah, exactly. I was going to say every time those commanders comes out and conspiracy to that for that matter.
Brian, have you ever played Commander with anyone besides me?
No, I have. I actually played with the guys down at the shop a few times. And yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's just the games go on so long. And as I said, if you got responsibilities, it's kind of like Commander is not your format. If but, you know, if I can jam three or four Legacy or Modern rounds in, you know, with the time it takes to play half a Commander game, that's where I'd rather be doing.
That's so. Why I'm a big fan of Tiny Leaders. I love Tiny Leaders.
Yeah, Tiny Leaders is definitely a format I can get into for sure.
Were we saying, though, about Eternal Masters? It's sort of like a Legacy Light Cube or Cube Light. Tiny Leaders has that same effect. It's essentially Legacy Light. And you want to talk about a gateway for people to get into. I think that if people are into those fringe formats, Tiny Leaders is a great taste of a much quicker paced game with a lot of decision trees on it early, like Legacy is, and it may whet the appetite for that. So do I have a Tiny Leaders deck? Yes, I do. Am I willing to play with people at the shop? Boy, and this is going to sound terrible, but I usually just take a deep breath and think to myself, just try and build the community a little bit, you know, just do it. So I don't really necessarily enjoy doing it. Now, if it's with one of the regular idiots and we want to play and drink some beers, that's fine because I kind of know what I'm in for. But then you have, and this is part of the social contract as well, and I'm sure we'll get into this in future episodes, is, well, what are you expected to do? Now, Tiny Leaders, you're a lot more defined with what's going on. So I think the expectation is a little easier to grok, but with EDH or Commander, you know, what are you doing? What power level do you want to play at? Or do you carry multiple decks with you? Matt used to do that. I used to do that. Now I just have one, and it's kind of intro friendly so that if we have new people, I can play with them without blowing them out of the water.
That's part of my issue as well, is that every game I play, I min-max. I'm terrible about it. I mean, whether I'm playing Diablo or I'm playing, you know, name your game or any RPG, I min max. So I don't look at my EDH decks of, hey, am I a 75% deck where, you know, I'm at not 100% power level, I'm at 75% power level, am I an intro friendly? I'm more looking at what's the more efficient card I can put in here, and I'm going to put that in, and then all of a sudden it kind of warps into this just machine that does the same thing every time. And then I'm like, oh, I'm bored with this already.
You're a terrible person.
I am. I really am. And maybe that's why I like Tiny Leaders so much, is because I can make those machines, but one machine typically is not so much more powerful than the other ones that it just blows everyone else out of the water. I mean, I'm playing Tribal Vampires in Tiny Leaders, and it's actually pretty good.
Tribal Vampire. You're that guy. I was wondering what that guy looked like, and that's you. It just got you on there. Oh my god,
it's actually pretty good. The only non-vampires I have in it are the Anathomancer and the Black White God, and that's the only non-vampire cards I have in there. The funniest was when I was playing Course in here locally, and he's like, what's that card do? Oh my god, I just got beat by vampires. I'm like, yes you did, sir. I want to talk about if it's okay to kill off main characters. We see this. We've seen this a couple times now. We've seen this with Elspeth. We've seen it with Kozilek. We've seen it with Ulamog. And now we've seen it with Avacyn. We're recording on Wednesday, and they just we all knew Anguish Unmaking was Soren killing Avacyn, but they actually had the story in it today. Do you think they're limiting their future storytelling by doing that? Are they driving players away? I mean, what's your guys' opinion on this?
Well, as somebody who has read all of the Game of Thrones novels, I am not in any way, shape, or form a stranger to somebody killing off main characters, because that's basically what J.R.R. Martin does, and you just have to roll with it. He sucks you in, kills off a character, and you're just kind of left with that hollow spot where your heart was, and you just have to move on. So I actually like this this idea. The BBC, I mean, this goes beyond magic, but this is something that we've seen in the past kind of 5 or 6 years. The BBC, when they came out with that show MI6 a few years ago, that was what that show was about. I mean, the BBC has notoriously always put out shows that are on for 2-3 years tops. Well, every 2 to 3 episodes, one of the main characters was getting offed. And you're just thinking the audience is going, oh, my gosh. And it could have easily turned against them, but the writing was so good that instead of abandoning that concept, the people came back saying, who are they going to off this week? And I think that's kind of the risk you take with something like that. So in this, it's kind of following in that pattern where you're taking a risk in killing off somebody that people love. At the same time, it keeps things fresh. It keeps things new. And we have to remember, these are fantasy characters. And one thing that I really do like about maybe going to Kaladesh that I see in the announcement today is I'm glad we're not revisiting an older plane again. I was a little like, okay, how many times are we going to recycle, you know, Magic's Past just to appease the customer base of what they're familiar with? So let's get some new things going on in there. So, yeah, I have no problem with that whatsoever.
With the ramped up release dates now, 2 sets a year, I think that they're not going to be able to go back to the well of old locations as often as they have. I think at most you're going to look at every 3rd set, because otherwise the burn will just be too quickly. So I'm thinking it's going to be Kaladesh, somewhere else we haven't been to, and then maybe a revisiting along the way. As they kind of work that out. Do I want there to be a recognizable pattern? Oh, it's the 3rd set. Where are we going back to? No, I think that undercuts the electricity to see what each set is if you already know in advance that there's a pattern there. So I hope we do go to some new places. You can always work in some of the favorites cards. Not every card is inextricably tied to its original set. So if there are cards or themes or things along those lines, I think you can work them back in. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with it. But as far as killing off main characters, I think that you have to have it. I think you have to have more of it, because what are they selling? They're selling the idea of a sense of adventure and danger, almost, in a way. And if it's just a CBS sitcom where everybody comes back next week, well, there's no sense that any decision matters. There's no sense that we're playing for any kind of high stakes whatsoever. There's no sense of drama that's moving that main storyline forward. So I think, obviously, you can't do it with all of them, but you need to do it. And they're no strangers to doing it. We've seen Venser already killed off. We've seen supposedly Elspeth killed off, although I don't think that's actually what they've done with her. I think we will see her again. Yeah. She's too popular. You've seen kind of Karn used in several ways that way. So we'll see where it goes. What I would like to see more of, though, is getting away from the idea of just showcasing the hero protagonist. I think we need a bigger development of an antagonist, or if you want to say anti-hero or whatever, in a visceral way. And because the Eldrazi are too incomprehensible from a human standpoint, they're just large monsters. What about you know, a planeswalker that's going to be in a set, but go at it from the other way, where you can play the villain and you can sort of, you know, use the villain. WotC's gotten away from this, especially in tournaments, to where they don't have, in the modern era, that sort of sense amongst the players. The cards are such the focus that you don't see the drama. And we're in a different era now, an era of clean and fair play and the recognition of that. But if you go back in history on the tournament, there were some really compelling pro tours and major events that they were compelling because of the people who were playing in them were divisive characters. I think everybody who's old enough thinks of Mike Long first when you kind of bring that up. And those were interesting because of the reputation and the divisive nature of the people involved. And if we're not going to develop characters, players that way, backstories that way, or let people sort of take these divisive stands on things and then build them up, then you're going to have to do it in the game. And I think that's what it's lacking to me. I'd like to see more of a focus put on actually utilizing a recognizable, and by recognizable, I mean, you know, human or humanoid development, mm-hmm. and not leaving it to the large monsters from another dimension to kind of be the bad guy. I think they really missed the boat with Omnixilus. I know he's more of a part of the story with what went on and is going on with the Eldrazi, especially when we were back on Zendikar. But they never fleshed that out. And I don't read all the Vortho stuff. Like, I want it fleshed out in a major way that you can't get away from and tell the story with the cards. You look at his card, and yeah, he can kill something, but that's just like Black's thing. That doesn't feel especially villainous. So tell me the story if you want to do that with the card. Give me the opportunity to play or play against some of the, quote, bad guys or bad dudes in the story.
I think they're starting to flush that out a little bit with Sorn, where he does everything for his own motivations. So sometimes he's good, sometimes he's bad. Omnixilus, they should have flushed him out more, but I think that he's definitely going to make a reappearance. I mean, they gave him his spark back. He is absolutely going to torture the Gatewatch, the Oath, whatever you want to call it. I do think they need to get more towards, and they're starting to push it, more towards an Avenger-style group where they have, you know, the Oath of the Gatewatch, but then it's kind of fluid. So maybe Tamio will join it. Maybe next set, this new Planeswalker, I don't remember her name, will join it. Maybe, you know, maybe that happens. And then maybe when that happens, oh no, we have a giant monkey wrench we throw into the story and Jace died. I mean, imagine the horrific, you know, the world is ending if that would happen.
I was just going to say, would they be ballsy enough to kill off their poster boy and kind of make that the calling card that, hey, anything could happen at any moment? Because I know there's plenty of people who would cheer Jace meeting his timely end.
Yeah, I would take those odds every single day that Wizards would definitely not kill off Jace with anytime soon. They're going to invent another Planeswalker and kill him off before I think we see Jace die. I'll eat my hat if that happens, because boy, Wizards would have definitely thrown me for a loop in the a la Game of Thrones J.R. Martin realm if that happens.
I'd rather seen you eat your mind sculptors if they killed him off.
Who knows? After Eternal Masters, maybe those will only be worth $30. You don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just have them with my morning Cheerios, you know.
While we're talking about that, he mentioned Mind Sculptor. So, you know, we all mentioned that our card collection. I have a new game. Now, the other two hosts of this podcast don't know what this game is. So it's a complete surprise to them. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to name off a set, and you name one card from it that's on the reserve list.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God. This is going to be as bad for us to experience as I think this is to listen to.
We'll start from the beginning, and Brian, you can be up. You can get the easy one. Alpha Beta Unlimited.
Volcanic Island.
All right, Sean?
You want me to go from that same set?
Yeah.
Any of the Power.
Yeah, that's an easy one. What about Arabian Nights? Sean first.
Juzwam Jin.
All right. Brian?
Only because I used to own one, Bazaar of Baghdad.
There you go. Which, I'm not exactly sure why that's on the...
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's literally played in one deck, but sure. That's neither here nor there. All right. Now we're starting to get into the difficult ones. Let's go ahead. Well, first, Antiquities. This is an easy one. Antiquities. Brian?
Oh, Mishra's Workshop. Easy.
Okay. Sean?
Antiquities on the reserve list.
can I give him a clue?
No, I played in my legacy deck.
Oh, random junk card.
This is hilarious because it's not.
Candelabra.
Yep. Good, good, all good, right, good. Legends. This is tough. Well, no, it's not. Sean first.
What's Moat?
Okay. Brian?
Let's see. Is All Hallows Eve on there?
Yes, it is.
Look at you going deep.
Wow, that was real deep. I was waiting for one of you to say Caracas, because it is not.
Caracas isn't on the reserve list?
Nope.
Nope. That's kind of why I wanted to play this week, because Eternal Masters, they start, all the reveals start next week. So we'll go down the next one, The Dark. This one's really tough. Brian, you're up first.
The Dark. Okay. I'm trying to think of go deep, like Elves of Deep Shadow Deep. No, that can't be on there. Is Preacher on there?
Ding, ding, ding.
My God, I can't believe Preacher's on Preacher.
Again, because he used to own one is the only reason he guessed that.
No, I still have it. I still have it.
Oh, are you kidding me? I have a bunch of them. It's awesome. I love that card.
So the flavors on that card is fantastic. Okay. Oh, my gosh, that's funny.
Sean?
From The Dark. Man, my mind is just racing at this point. You've stumped me on this one.
All right. We'll mark this down as a failure.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
I might rescue Sean here. I'm going to take a stab in The Dark. And Sean, is maybe the worst land ever printed on the reserve list, if you want to guess that?
Sorrow's Path.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. Sorrow's Path. The worst land ever printed.
I was waiting for one of you to say Sorrow's Path.
Oh, God, I have that card.
See, I've just scrubbed that card from my mental library. I mean, who needs that taking up a brain cell?
Yeah, this is true. This is very.
I also would have accepted Goblin Wizard.
What? Oh, hilarious.
So, next set would be Fallen Empires.
Oh, my favorite set of all time. Eben Prater?
Eben Prater is, in fact, on the reserve list.
Yeah. It can't be one of the lands because they've been reprinted. Oh. Order of the Eben Hand? Order of Leap Bird? The Pump Knights in black and white.
Oh, yeah. The Pump Knights are a good guess.
Negative.
Ooh. Wonder how they haven't printed those yet.
So let's go really deep on this one. A card that I actually played a lot of from Fallen Empires, River Merfolk.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Wow.
That's the Mountain Walk River Merfolk.
Oh, God. Jeez.
Rainbow Veil.
Rainbow Veil. That's right. I have a couple of those
somewhere. Wow. Rainbow Veil.
Yeah.
Okay. Next set is Homelands.
No, Autumn Willow.
Yeah, I think you're right on that one.
She is. Brian? All right.
I'm going to go Baron Singer.
That is correct.
Oh, wow.
Our encyclopedic knowledge of Homelands is everything you need to know about this show.
Sean, you may be right that this could be terrible to listen to, but I had to play this game right before Eternal Masters came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, Ice Age.
Okay, the only Ice Age card that I can think of that might be on the it's got to be on the reserve list because it was done when you were playing for Ante was Amulet of Cause.
Correct. You,
yes. Yeah.
Sean, do you have?
They still had Ante cards in Ice Age. How crazy is that?
Sean, you're down 1 point right now.
Didn't they have like Demonic Consultation or something in there? Was that on the list?
No. In there, I believe, but it's not on the reserve list.
I'm going to need a Demonic Consultation to win this game.
Just because they have Ante on him doesn't mean that they're on the reserve list, by the way. I will tell you that.
Okay. Well, then that was me getting lucky.
That was. It had a cumulative upkeep and it had gain 20 life on it.
Oh, Illusions of Grandeur.
There you go.
Oh, nice one.
Let's go to Alliances.
Oh, I got this.
Get him.
I'm going to say Helm of Obedience.
Correct.
Yes.
Wow. You're throwing the gauntlet down on me on this one. Who was the white general that was part of the storyline there? Darren of Keld or something like that?
I know who you're talking about. No, he's not on.
Ah.
Sean, I will get tell you this. All of the lands from alliances are on the reserve list.
That would have been the good one. So, like, Lake of the Dead?
Yep.
Thawing Glaciers is on the reserve list?
Yep.
What?
Wow. Yeah. Balduvian Trading Post.
Man, I played the shit out of Thawing Glaciers.
What about Kel'Joran Outpost?
Yep. That is on the reserve list. We got Mirage.
Oh, that's easy. LED.
Yep. Sean?
Vampiric Tutor?
Nope. What's my favorite one drop that is a 12-12?
Oh, yeah, I played that deck. The Metal Scorpion.
Phyrexian Dreadnought.
Yeah.
Yeah, Phyrexian Dreadnought.
Wow. Yeah, I played Stifleknot for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I should have known that.
What's in Visions?
Did they do that series of, like, terrible dragons at Rare and Vintage? Everybody always talks about how the Kamigawa dragons were pretty much bad. There was a set way before that. Was it Visions where it was just awful?
It was Visions, yes.
Okay.
You were just getting blown out of the water here, Sean. I thought you were, like, the guy for this.
No, I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
Visions, I'm going to go with one of my favorite cards from Visions that I played in the Prosper Bloom deck, which was Squandered Resources.
That is correct. And has seen a massive price increase.
Oh, has it?
Because Gitrog Monster. Sean, what's your favorite hippo?
Everybody's supposed to say Feldegriff, but I never got the Feldegriff love. I never had that whole Feldegriff thing going on. I will say this, though. Prosper Bloom was the first, quote, real deck that Brian and I ever played. Before that, it was just like, what stuff kind of do you own? Let's put it in the deck, you know, just whatever. And
Dark Ritual, into a Singer Vampire type
right,
deck.
Right,
yes.
You know, everybody had that. But no, we got together and put a couple of those Prosper Bloom decks together, and that was the first, I always tell, that was the first, like, real deck that I played. And boy, you notice a huge difference in not just putting stuff from your binder in a pile to actually putting something together that works. And that's rather intoxicating when you get that feel.
Yeah.
I'll give you a little hint here on this Visions one. What's your favorite, or what's one of your favorite two-drop artifacts that you try to make work with Chains of Mephistopheles?
Oh, Anvil of Bogardan.
Yep, that is definitely on the reserve list.
Ooh. Oh, that's a good card.
I've got that in one variation of my Pox deck.
So what's in Weatherlight? This is another tough one because nobody plays any of these, literally.
Wasn't the Weatherlight itself?
What, Skyship Weatherlight?
Yeah, yeah.
No, that was in Planar Chaos, I think. Or not Planar Chaos. It was in Exodus, I think. But no, it's not. If you handed me all of these cards except for one, I would literally have to look up what they do.
Okay. There's an artifact out of Weatherlight that I really liked, even though it's totally inefficient, but that's just kind of the guy I am. Bosium Strip.
That is correct.
Oh, yes. I love that card.
That was a great card.
Basically, what gave cards flashback before there was a thing called flashback.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And it's got like 10 paragraphs of text. Sean, what about a great sideboard card in Legacy that screws over artifacts?
Null Rod.
Yep. That is definitely on the reserve list.
I knew that, and last time I looked up a price of a Null Rod, I couldn't believe it.
It's currently, I'll tell you currently what it is. It's currently ridiculous is what it is. $16. Now we're in the home stretch here. We'll do Tempest.
Tempest.
Yeah, there's literally like 10. Now there's like every single, or like half of these see play in Legacy. In fact, one of them is banned from Legacy.
Oh, Earthcraft. Earthcraft Correct. Is banned. Okay.
Did you give him the answers before we started doing this? I can't believe that this is happening.
I'm losing a little bit of respect for you every single time I hit his block.
Brian has his iPad like in his lap. He's looking these up.
What has seen like three price spikes, and it's an enchantment that has to do with a mana cost three or less.
Choke?
No, it's Alluren is what I was referring to.
I never liked Alluren decks.
Oh, Alluren.
There's only 8 cards from Stronghold, so I'll take one answer.
Oh, Mox Diamond.
Yep. And there's another.
Nice.
Sliver Queen was the other one. And Dream Halls.
Dream Halls, yeah, that's not a broken card at all.
Not even in the slightest. Exodus, there's really only about eight on this, but there's two that matter.
City of Traitors.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, that's what
and
I was
And the other one is Survival.
Yep.
Oh,
now,
sure.
Now, we'll just block off all of Urza's. Destiny, Legacy, or Saga? Because this was a weird one. So, name me one from Destiny, Legacy, or Saga.
Oh, any of the crazy lands. So, yeah. You've got
Talarian Academy.
Gaea's Cradle.
Yep.
Talarian Academy.
Sarah.
Sanctum.
Oh, what is that one? Yeah, Sarah Sanctum.
Yep. Grim Monolith is also on the reserve list.
Yeah, oh yeah.
With Memory Jar and Palancron.
Well, I understand Memory Jar, but Palancron?
Yep.
Really?
That's the end of the reserve list. Obviously, you guys, Sean needs to brush up on it.
Whew. But, you know what? That just goes to show how much ridiculous, useless knowledge I have in my brain, because that's just a silly thing that I know that those cards existed. So.
But one of the cards that you guys mentioned, and this is going to roll right into our next quick topic, Rishadin Port is not on the reserve list. And I want to talk about Eternal Masters just for a second. I'm kind of the finance guy here. I heavily think that they're going to have Mana Drain in there because Mana Drain's on the reserve list. Port, I think, is almost a shoe-in. Nothing of real high value, I think, is going to be on there outside that. I mean, outside of the Wasteland and the Force of Will already. I do think they're going to try and reprint the fetches, but I think that might drive the value up just a little bit too much. They don't want to make it so valuable that, you know, the boxes are selling for $1,000.
You think they're going to – which fetches? All the Onslaught fetches?
No, all the Zendikar ones.
Oh, the Zendikar fetches, yeah, because they just did the Onslaught. Okay, so the Zendikar – you think the Zendikar fetches might be in there?
If they don't have any high-value cards in there, then yes.
I could definitely, by your rationale, I could definitely see Port being in there just because that card is ridiculous price-wise. And it's really, I mean, is there any other deck other than Death and Taxes in Legacy that it's used as a
occasionally Goblins. I mean.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, I know it's making a little bit of a comeback, but that's still not as popular. I mean, it definitely slots into the Death and Taxes deck extremely well. Mana Drain is interesting just because it's so old and it's banned in Legacy. So that would be a shout out to what? Vintage players? Because they can call it Eternal Masters? Is this really what we're doing here?
Well, and you have to look. Mana Drain is used in EDH. I mean, I hate to say it, but it is. And then one of the big, outside of the Power 9, one of the big pushbacks from Vintage is that every blue decker has four Mana Drains in it. It's almost ubiquitous. So right there, you're dealing with $600 minimum if you buy beat-up Mana Drains. I mean, that'd be an easy way to inject supply into the markets. I really do think Mana Drain's going to be in there. I mean, Sean and I both got rid of our Mana Drains when we were in Indianapolis, and I really, really do think that's going
to
be in there.
Well, if we're looking at Vintage, then I guess we're going to look forward to Slash Panther being in there as well. So,
I don't think you're going to see Jace. I do think that a good one would be either Crucible Worlds or Ensnaring Bridge. Do you see a reason not to print it in that?
No, I don't. I mean, Ensnaring Bridge has been printed enough. Does it need another printing?
It's back up, way back up.
I mean, that's fine. I own them. That's all good. But, I mean, it was printed originally in, what, Stronghold, and then again in, like, 8th? So
7th and 8th. And, I mean, they're back up into the $30 to $35 range.
That doesn't seem excessive to me. Again, we go back to the idea of it being a collectible card game. I'm okay with not everyone being able to have everything. That's kind of the point of the game.
And the reason I say it's Ensnaring Bridge, too, is they are going to be looking at cards that have value to kind of drive people to set. But also, this is a card that it's not going to be breaking in a limited – I mean, it's not going to break a limited environment by any means. Unless you have, like, a massive discard outlet so I could just hide behind my Ensnaring Bridge. But you put it at rare, that's a fine one. Crucible Worlds is another. It probably needs another printing.
Sure, I mean, they're up at, what, 65, 70?
Oh, yeah, 65 or 70 for that card is ridiculous. So, yeah, I definitely could see that for sure. But again, it's you know, that is a card that definitely can affect games. But is it really slotted into a lot of different kinds of modern decks right now?
Yes and no. I mean, you see it pop up every now and then, but it's mostly in legacy and vintage is where you see it. And the question is I guess the only way this is backbreaking is if you get Wastelock, because you have Wasteland in the set, so it's potentially possible you get Crucible and Wasteland, but I mean, that's just one of the things you do, and when you play Crucible, you play Wasteland. I think that'll really give a good feel to it. I don't think it's going to screw over anybody that much, because you're not going to have that many non-basic lands. I think that in our next sets, in the now that they announced Kaladesh, I was originally going to say that Thopter Sword combo was going to be in here. I think they're probably going to reprint that in Kaladesh, because I don't think that would be too broken. Maybe one and not the other. I mean, maybe you print Sword, or you print Thopter Foundry, but don't print the other one. And you print the other one in as an uncommon in Eternal Masters. I mean, they're both perfectly salvageable at uncommon. So why not see those? A good rare is going to be Ancestral Vision. I mean, I don't think it's an accident that when they reprinted that, or when they unbanned that I think they have plans to actually reprint those in the near future.
Yeah,
otherwise,
I've got a
they would not
you're
have
right
rebanned or unbanned them when they banned the Eldrazi Menace. Do you guys see any cards that you think will pop up in there? I don't think we'll see any big splashy Planeswalkers. Maybe they'll reprint Dak Faden in it, because he does need a reprinting. He was just so limited. But I kind of think, will Dak Faden be breaking to Modern?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's a 3-drop that gives you the ability to Faithless Loot or steal an artifact. The decks that play artifacts in Modern are artifact decks, so just taking one of their little guys doesn't really do anything for you. And the artifacts that you would want to steal in Modern are hardly ever played. I mean, how often do you see the swords played in Modern that can really make a big difference? I mean, Batterskull would be the one, and that's probably the one it steals most often in Legacy as well. Now, you're cheating it out, obviously, in Legacy with Stoneforge Mystic, but I don't see him being very threatening to Modern at all.
The reason I mention that is I could easily see him in Kaladesh. I don't think he'd fit perfectly from a storyline aspect. He fit perfectly in Kaladesh. I don't think he'd be breaking the standard by any means, unless he'd be a good stop valve for huge artifact decks, because you know they're going to have big dumb artifacts in Kaladesh.
That's fascinating. These are questions that I had not thought about. Some of the ones you just brought up, especially Dak Faden, with the flavor text of a Kaladesh, just looking at the artwork and kind of where it could go, Thopter Sword seems to make perfect sense, especially, and Ancestral Visions, totally. Dak Faden, you're absolutely right on that. Some of the other ones, yeah, it'll be curious to see how they play it out and tease it all out, I guess.
Yeah, I just kind of want to go over that. I mean, some of my thoughts on that, because really, Kaladesh threw a lot of what everyone thought was going to be an Eternal Masters into a whole kind of blender, because a lot of them are very artifact-centric, or they're very control-centric, and I see them fitting into Kaladesh now.
While we're in the finance section of the podcast, it's time for a ride that you're going to look forward to, or may become your own personal hell each week. We're going to spend 1 minute in the financial elevator with Matt Hurley. Matt's going to pick a card each week that he thinks is either going up or one that could soon be going down. And it'll be our financial elevator ride with Matt. Matt, who you got in the elevator with you this week?
Nahiri. Sell, 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 to use Jim Cramer. She is absolutely powerful, but she's in an imprint set, and her price is over half of what Jace Friend's Prodigy is right now. In fact, she's within $20 of Jace Friend's Prodigy, who saw heavy play in Standard. This is really the new card of the week. I do think I'm glad to see that she has a spot in Modern, but I mean, she's not warranting her $40 price tag. If she doesn't see any Standard play, she's $20 to $25. If she does see Modern play, then yes, she will maintain a $40 to $50 price tag. So I would say sell your Nahiris.
That's interesting. Yeah, because everybody keeps buying them. But maybe to their detriment. You're absolutely right.
I mean, it's going to be one of those, it's spiked, and then it's good. I wouldn't say it's dropped like a rock, but it's definitely going to go down. I mean, we're already seeing it trending downwards. It's already in the low 30s right now, and it was up to over $40. Now, with the two Modern GPs this weekend, it's going to see another spike. So maybe you hold on to them to get that last 15% out of them. But I would say sell right now because it's going to maintain that $20-$25 range at best. I mean, think about the last card that really maintained a $30 price tag purely on modern play from something that was in a standard open or from a modern open set, currently opened. Can you think of a card that maintained that price tag?
The only one that I can think back to that might have been the case is Voice of Resurgence.
That was a highly under-open set. I would agree. That was a big one. But, I mean, even then, that was still a $25 card, and it was seeing heavier play than Nahiri is.
That actually ties back to something we were talking about earlier. I hope they reprint Voice in Eternal Masters.
There you go. There's another one I didn't even consider myself. That would make perfect sense, too, because if you have Voice in there, then you can easily put in like Swords to Plowshares and Path to Exile.
I don't think we'll see both of them in there. I think we'll see Swords for sure, but you put Voice in there, it serves as a natural foil for putting Mana Drain in there.
Yep. So,
Yeah, that's a good point.
I like it. We're off to a flying start on our conspiracy theories here on Tryhards.
Oh, God, and I've got so many theories, man.
I know.
Mostly false.
We'll be wearing the tinfoil hats here some weeks. Absolutely. On Tryhards. Guys, we've got two more segments to get to tonight, and I'm excited about both of them. These are things we're going to do each week, and if you're looking at the rundown, I'm going to go in reverse order right now. We're going to end with how we improved in Magic this week. This is something that we're going to make a recurring part of the show. I want to start with the card of the week. This is something we're going to do. Card of the week, 3 minutes to brew. The tryhards, TRI, there's three of us, 3 minutes to brew. Guys, Lightning Axe is our card of the week this week. Shadows over Innistrad, one red, deals 5 damage to a creature. It's an instant, but you have to discard a card when you play it. 3 minutes to brew. Guys, where do you see Lightning Axe being a player, if at all?
Oh, I definitely think that Todd Anderson kind of broke this open with his blue-red goggles deck a few weeks ago and was just running rampant over people until they kind of caught up with the format a little bit. You know, when you see Lightning Axe being played and then discarding Fiery Temper, in response to that, you know, you're getting rid of your opponent's entire board. That's pretty sweet tech right there. The Madness mechanic, I think, is great from what Wizards brought back to it. I think it's going to stick around a lot, especially since Goggles is going to be a thing for a while.
The underplay thing right now is kind of a Delirium Madness deck with Lightning Axe. I think that's a key player in it. The Vampire, who's the black-red vampire, the Legendary.
Olivia.
Yeah. For War.
Mobilize Olivia. For War. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Olivia, building around her, is going to be great. Being able to have multiple stuff that discards a card. And the reason I mentioned Olivia is because you're going to have your discard outlet as Olivia and Lightning Axe, and then you're just going to have stuff that accompanies that very well. That's why I like that Grixis Control deck so much. Maybe Lightning Axe is a player. Maybe Olivia's not a big enough player yet, especially with Fiery Temper and Lightning Axe out there. But I really, really think that she's going to play a key role with Lightning Axe at some point.
The reason I bring this up is because this is something that I'm looking at right now for my, I'm going to do it because I'm old, my Dagah Walkers deck right now. For those of you who thought that the shards got names when we went to Alara, my personal favorite block of all time, no, they already had names. Wizards just renamed them in a branding effort at that point, and black, red, white was Dagah, so I'll continue to call it that. I also call it Normandy, but that's a story for another time. I'm really liking my Dagah Super Friend strategy right now. But what I'm looking at is interactivity early in the game. I've got Duress. I've got Transgress the Mind. And while those colors have great removal, I'm wondering if Lightning Axe is a way to go for two reasons. One, it does a crucial 5 points of damage. That will get you anything out of the mono white deck. That will get you a juiced up Sylvan Advocate. That will get you practically anything you can think of in standard right now. And I'm also kind of working this as a control deck, and I've kind of gone over to the dark side, and I'm playing 27 lands as the mana base. Oh, it's buttery smooth. But it is, not only do you make your land drops 1 through 5 with regularity, which is where you want to be, but those extra lands later in the game then become easy to discard, whether it's to Nahiri, whether it's to Lightning Axe, whether it's to whatever you need. And if you have a hand early that's, say, a 2-action 5-land hand, you know you're going to get your action and your land. So it's nothing on turn 2 when they put down something to just throw the extra land at that point. I think Lightning Axe might have a role there. Is that too much card disadvantage at that point?
I don't think it's too much card disadvantage, just because there's so many things you can discard to it. There's a lot of utility madness cards in the colors you're talking about, especially also with even like a Drownyard Temple. Drownyard Temple is a fantastic card. Because, you know, you're going to get value out of that because, hey, on your opponent's end step, I'm going to return a land and make my land drop, maybe double up on my land in the next 2 turns. That's going to be a pretty sweet play.
I would say Alms of the Vein. That, I'm a big fan of that one. Do you even know what that card does?
I do. It's basically +3/-3 life. Not a fan of that one.
Actually, the card, and I say that half jokingly, the card that I think it's probably one of the best one drops in standard right now is Insolent Neonates.
Yeah, I would go with that. That's a very, very good card, especially for the discard outlet, sure.
I mean, if you're running red, Insolent Neonates, because I think people look 1/1 Menace Vampire and they think, oh, it's aggressive. Well, no, you've got to look at multiple things. First off, the one thing you need to look at is that if they throw down a 3-drop Nissa, the planeswalker, they're putting down 1 plant. You can ping her down because they can't block because they only have 1 plant out. Same way with Gideon. It just sits on the board. You can view it as an enchantment if you really want to, and you just discard a card, sacrifice it, draw a card. If you discard a land and you sacrifice it and draw a card, okay, then they probably wasted a removal spell on it. If you do that and you have if you're doing something, you know, that it has madness on it, which my favorite would be From Under the Floorboards.
Yes. But, you have no idea how good that is. I'm running 2 copies main in Dagon Walkers because you can buy yourself time, and then late in the game, like, just like I hear that for like 6 to 8, and oh, it's just gross. Like, you take some damage, you languish. You're around 8 or 9 life. They think they're on the thing, and then you Nahiri and discard that for X and make 6 2/2s and gain 6. Oh, it's so good.
But I would say Insolent Neonate is the one drop that's being ignored right now. There's a lot of one drops that are being ignored.
That is 3 minutes to brew. We went over time, but we promise we'll get a little better at telling time. Guys, we've been at it for a while on the inaugural episode of Tryhards. I know that there is something that we want to make a part of this show each and every week, and it's how we got better at Magic this week. What did we each do to get better at Magic this week? And this is something we want to bring to the table each week. And so I'll get us started this week. I wasn't afraid. I mentioned earlier in the show that I've been working on a standard black, red, white Planeswalker control deck. I took it to FNM the last 2 weeks, played it, and I made significant changes to it. And you can get attached to certain cards or certain strategies, especially when you're working on something that hasn't been done or hasn't been done exactly that way before. And you think, no, this is good. It's going to work. Well, if you don't respond to the metagame around you and the way it develops, yet your card choice might be good in a vacuum, but that's not really how the games are playing out against you. So I went out and I had purchased a couple in. They weren't real pricey, to the Slaughters. I thought it was going to work out great. It was going to be just instant value town. But because I'm playing so much control, I wasn't able to get to Delirium very easily. And it ended up just being kind of meh at best. And the amount of hoops I was jumping through to make it actually good was actually setting the rest of the deck back. So I just abandoned it. I put in an extra Ruinous Path, and the deck just flows so much better that you have to get away from and admit, I think, either mistakes that you've made or admitting to yourself, allowing yourself to be honest and say, I misjudged where this metagame was going. Though it wasn't that painful for me because I think I got like 2 of them for $1 or whatever. But just going out of your way to acquire something and then realizing, you know what, that's not actually very good right now. And I'm a big believer in right now, because the metagame could change and we could get away from all these token decks, and To the Slaughter could be amazing. That was my realization this week. When I'm working on a new deck, one that I haven't just tuned from somewhere else, but one that I'm genuinely building, after I play an event with it, even if it's just FNM, I like to come home, lay it out, break it down, and I'll take the cards and kind of set them to one side that were underwhelming and the ones that really kind of overperformed, and see how I can tweak the deck. So just being honest with yourself when you do that, I think, is a big thing.
The thing I did this week was actually... I got to see a little bit of coverage over the weekend, and since I got to see a little bit of coverage, I actually got to see the red-white control deck that looks like a ton of fun in Modern. It made me ask myself a question. It said, what's keeping me back from Modern? So I looked at that deck. I looked at a couple of the other red-white-blue control decks, and I think the format is starting to shape up a little bit better. That kind of led into the next question of, why are the Chalice of the Voids in there? What are they stopping at the one drop spots? And so it enhanced my knowledge of Modern, because I kind of went through and looked at all the one drops to say, okay, what does this card do? What role does it serve in the opposing decks? And I got to say, I mean, it made me appreciate Modern just a little bit more. I'm still obviously a big Legacy guy, but it's not the dumb format, creature format I thought it was.
What I did this week to, get better at Magic, like Sean alluded to oh so long ago at the beginning of the show, I loaned cards to guys because, hey, they're not doing me any good while they're sitting around in my basement, and so they got to use them. I've been brewing just randomly, kind of either on the iPad or throwing some lists together down in the basement. I've currently got two Legacy decks kind of in process, two Modern decks in process, and two Standard decks in process. So I'm kind of feeling my way through those. And as the time opens up here in the next couple of weeks, I'm looking forward to doing that. But to be honest with you, I'm with you. I like watching the coverage this weekend. I'm really looking forward to seeing how decks come out of these GPs, because it's always better to get a better sense of, you know, where the game's at out of GPs, I think, than some of the Star City Games Opens or some of the Channel Fireball events.
Brian, you keep saying coverage. One of these weeks, I'm going to let you guys pump a couple of drinks in me, and then we're going to talk about the, for the most part, abysmal job that coverage of Magic is in the current state of affairs, and get into all that. But that's something we won't get into tonight. You're experiencing Episode 1 of the Tryhards. You can email the show. We're thetryhards3@gmail.com. THETRIHARDS, HARDS, and the number 3, the alphanumeric number 3. thetryhards3@gmail.com if you want to email the show. I'm sean.secrease@gmail.com as well, spelled just like it is in the show notes. That's pretty much the only way you're going to be able to get a hold of me now. Matt does the Twitter. Matt, I know you can you can hook up with people in a variety of ways.
You can follow me at Hurlman81, H-U-R-L-M-A-N-81. And you can also follow the show at TheTryHards3 on Twitter, just like the email address. So it's at TheTryHards3. And we are actually going to be doing a giveaway here on Twitter here in the next few episodes,
and I can be found as they said at the Tryhard site, or I am at brian.tibbetts TIBBETS @gmail.com, or at Brian Tibbetts on Twitter. I'd be thrilled to have some more followers.
We hope to entertain and inform along the way, and we'll never leave you alone in the financial elevator with Matt Hurley, at least not without another adult present.
You better have your whistle.
We have to be out every Wednesday. So look for us at mtgcast.com each and every Wednesday. Whatever you find this, welcome to the Tryhards, thetryhards3@gmail.com. You want to get in contact with the show, send us your thoughts, positive or negative, as it goes. And we'll certainly give that feedback to you and let you know more about the Twitter contest coming up here on The Tryhards 3. Thanks to Quiet Speculation and everyone who makes it happen at mtgcast.com. Thanks to Tyler Tyler and Chewy for reviewing our proposal for this podcast and bringing us into the family at mtgcast.com. For the boys, I'm Sean. This is the Tryhards. We'll see you again next week.